This episode is made possible by Walmart Connect. Are you looking to take your media strategy to the next level? Make an impact with millions of customers? Walmart Connect harnesses the massive reach of America's number one retailer. They can help you connect more meaningfully with Walmart's 139 million weekly online and in-store customers to find the right audience for your message. They use Walmart's proprietary customer purchase data to help you precisely target even niche audiences at scale. Visit walmartconnect.com today to see how they can help you find the customers you want at the scale you need.
Essentially, social media is a major gatekeeper at this point. The other one is search. You know, so if you're building a strategy that would be reliant on social media, I would just ask that publisher why, given the fact that the rules of engagement can just change on you immediately.
Hey gang, it's Monday, April 1st. Danny, Jeremy, and listeners, welcome to the Behind the Numbers Daily. It's an eMarketer podcast made possible by Walmart Connect. I'm Marcus. Today I'm joined by two folks, both of them right for our briefing. One of them is the Senior Director of Briefings based in New York. It's Jeremy Goldman.
That's me. How you doing?
Hey, fella. Very good. Thanks for being here. We're also joined by someone else in New York. It's Daniel Konstantinovich, who writes for our marketing and advertising briefing. How you doing, fella?
Doing good. How about you?
Yes, very good, sir. Today, we're talking all about the future of publishers in part one of our two episodes. The second one will be tomorrow. But we start with today's fact. We don't use just 10% of our brains.
We use 8%?
Just 8?
I don't know.
Shortchange me, Jeremy. We don't just use 10%. We use all of it at one time or another. A lot of the brain is even active when a person is resting or sleeping. The 10% myth was debunked in a study published in Frontiers in Human Neuroscience. So where did the myth come from? Medical News Today explains that in an article published in 1907, edition of journal Science, psychologist and author William James argued humans only use part of their mental resources, but he never gave a percentage. The figure was referenced in Dale Carnegie's 1936 book, How to Win Friends and Influence People, described as something the author's college professor used to say. And there's also a belief among scientists that neurons make up about 10% of the brain's cells, which may have contributed to the 10% myth. Wow. This one was heartbreaking because I'd always told myself there's a whole other gear I could reach if I just tapped into the other 90%. Turns out this is as smart as I'll be. How disappointing. Anyway, today's real topic. The future of publishers, part one. What to do about the Gen AI issue. In today's episode, first in the lead, we'll cover the future of publishers. Then for another news, we'll discuss social app BeReal's next move and why X, formerly Twitter, is pivoting to CTV, of all things. We start, of course, with the lead. And gents, we put our heads together and decided there was too much to talk about for one episode on the future of publishers, broke it into two. And in this first one, we wanted to set the stage to start out with. And so let's do that first. It's no surprise publishers are struggling. A lot of folks would know that. It seems like there's almost too much evidence at this point. A lot you guys have written about. We've seen recent layoffs at tech news site Engadget, Condé Nast, Time, The Washington Post, The LA Times, Vice Media and Sports Illustrated have more than uncertain futures. Online news site The Messenger is closing down after just 8 months, and much, much more. Daniel, I'll start with you, though. What jumps out to you regarding the current backdrop of publishing?
I mean, a lot of publications, especially ones that started out as print and tried to make the pivot to digital, have struggled for a long time. And now it's kind of reaching a point of severe decline, or maybe like an end game, and things need to change. You know, there are going to be a few, I would say, you know, strong survivors of the current landscape, and a lot of companies that are trying new things. And out of those companies that are trying new things, which I'm sure we'll talk about, hopefully a new business model will emerge, because like the current model of purely relying on advertising revenues just isn't working out for a lot of reasons.
Yeah. Jeremy, what jumps out to you?
I'm trying to separate out what I hope to happen from what I think might actually happen, you know, because certainly we do need some strong publishers, and even like the big companies like big tech and AI that's kind of dinging publishers right now, I would argue that like you maybe have like they do need some strong content to pull from. But ultimately, yeah, it's a really challenging business model right now.
One of the most pressing questions at the moment for publishers is this question of what to do about Gen AI. Daniel, you wrote in a January piece, Google working to launch Gen AI search features that summarize articles and answer users' queries without having to click through to read links, a development that threatens publisher revenues to a significant degree, of course, because publishers hope that you click on their links, click on their sites, and then they can make money through subscriptions or ads or whatever. So Daniel, I'll start with you because you kind of wrote about Google working on this Gen AI search. What are publishers supposed to do about ChatGPT like Gen AI that summarizes answers?
That's a tough question.
Figure it out, Danny. Come on.
Yeah, I'm going to figure it out right now.
People are relying on you.
I'm going to fix the media business model right here. So
finally.
What are they supposed to do? I mean, there's little that they can do. I mean, the publishing industry has, it's not much of a solution.
That's
but
bleak.
The publishing industry has been dependent on platforms for a long time, you know, whether it's traffic from social media platforms or Google. Like Google Search is kind of the last big platform that I would say the publishing industry is dependent on. And a lot of these companies are relying on being the first result in a Google search. And, you know, Google has said if we do this, you know, chatbot answer, we'll make the chatbot link to the story where they got the answer. But if I'm a user and I'm asking a question and I have the answer right there, why would I click through to the article?
Yeah. When people already do that, right? When you Google something, just at the top. The answer's at the top.
That is, I think, one thing that was really interesting is that web snippets, you know, which I feel like in some ways you're kind of referencing. At the start, they were like these innocuous things about, oh, let me figure out how as a publisher I can format all of my content so that snippets get surfaced, you know, and it's a really good search marketing practice, right, where I can get more organic traffic to my site. And some of that is true, you know, like some people will click through and you'll be rewarded in that way if you play that game. But what's also true is that not everybody will click through because you've done such a good job at surfacing exactly what they needed that they're like, why should I actually bother to go through? And as a result, Danny is completely right. It's, you know, if you can basically chop off 20% of your digital ad revenue right off the top because you're just not getting that traffic, you know, then you have to essentially charge more for the remaining clicks in order to remain competitive. And then you're no longer like a good price and you can be undercut by everybody else. So that's part of what makes it so challenging.
Yeah. And I mean, if you are charging more for that ad space, advertising data that publishers can provide is often not as robust or useful as data from social media platforms where there's like much more intricate user information that can be pulled out of it. But to answer your question more specifically, Marcus, I'd say there are maybe three things that publishers can do.
Oh,
one of them
I'll
is
take a list.
Strike deals with AI companies, which is something that a bunch have already done, including Axel Springer, our parent company, has struck deals with AI companies for licensing purposes.
Yep.
So they are turning this technology that could pose an existential threat into a revenue source.
And it seems like there could be a few others as well. Yeah, I mean, the Associated Press, they've struck a deal. And then Bloomberg reporting, CNN, Fox Corp, and Time have all had discussions about licensing their work to OpenAI. So definitely one lifeline, so to speak.
But we don't really have numbers for those deals. So the question is, the money that they're getting from OpenAI or whomever, you know, enough to offset the loss in ad revenues that like AI search could present? It's unclear. And I don't think it's like a panacea. But another thing that they could do, and this is not such an easy solution, is try to rely less on ad revenues that come from Google search or the, you know, social media links and try and build a dedicated audience. This is something that, you know, the New York Times has done well and The Verge has done well and a couple of other Vox sites. These are sites that have focused not so much on being the first result on Google, although they often can be, but they are really working hard to develop a devoted readership so that, you know, you have people visiting their homepage every day or every other day who aren't dependent on traffic from Google. You know, they're coming there out of a desire to see what's on the Times homepage or the Verge homepage, rather than, you know, hoping that they land at the top of the search results and get traffic. Mm-hmm. But that's, you know, not so easily done. That requires like a major strategic and editorial shift. And it's not something that can be done overnight. The companies that are doing it well now are companies that have been working in that direction for a while. So maybe too late to pivot for some of those companies that are still relying on like the shrinking model.
I would just kind of add on to the fact that, you know, it's a little bit like if you're playing most sports, right? Like basketball, soccer, or whatever, you know, you should probably be going towards where the ball is headed, not where it's been. And I think with a lot of publishers, mm-hmm. you know, we have seen this where some publishers kind of almost wish that they were starting their new venture 10 years ago, 15 years ago, and then they adhere to an outdated playbook in terms of how they're going to get their traffic, how they're going to monetize. And instead, it's actually a much better idea of thinking about like what direction are things going, and then try to build a company that's essentially future-proof because it's leaning into the trends of, you know, the business world of today.
Mm-hmm. Dan, you had three?
Yes. The third one I'll just mm-hmm. say really quick is you could do what the New York Times seems to be doing with AI, which is using it to try and bolster their ad business by providing more detailed or you know, robust user data. The New York Times is suing OpenAI because they couldn't figure out a content licensing deal, but they are trying to use the tech to plug what's historically been a pretty big gap in publishers' ad businesses. I just mentioned that, you know, platform data from YouTube or, you know, Instagram or whatever is usually more useful mm-hmm. to advertisers than something from just the publisher's website. And so the hope is that AI can, you know, plug the hole there.
So, Jeremy, apart from, you know, what happens when Gen AI summarizes your article and no one clicks through to your website, another concern is ad load balance. And you need to make money to put ads on your site. If you put too many, it becomes cluttered. No one wants to read content on that site. So in your opinion, how does sites strike the right ad load balance?
You know, some of it is really involving looking at sponsorships, looking at deals that are going to add to your bottom line. Like if we're thinking about advertising and promotions, look into things like that that are going to allow you to keep the ad load at a permissible level. Because if you just basically say, hey, what we're going to do is just essentially turn our sites into junk in the spirit of keeping afloat, it becomes a bit of a vicious cycle, right? Where you start to increase the ad load, you look, you know, you're sending signals to Google that you're like a lower quality site. Your users start to feel like they're being treated like they're lower quality, right? Which then it becomes, you know, a very pernicious cycle, and it's really hard to get around it. So I think one of the key things is essentially find advertising adjacent revenues that can help mm-hmm. you stay afloat. You know, there are some examples of companies that are, forget about like data licensing and things like that, but even leaning into events and experiential and finding adjacent services, you know, like gaming, if you think about the New York Times, you know, to increase time spent and increase the overall fidelity of the platform rather than just have a, you know, never-ending cycle of ads that you just have to keep on increasing the load because your user base is dwindling. Nobody wants that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think what Jeremy said about the vicious cycle is exactly right. Like there are a lot of companies that you could point to who have had this issue. Gannett, which owns a ton of local newspapers, which has just shrunk, you know, really significantly year after year after year and is really struggling. Another one is Geo Media. This is a company that bought up what was formerly Gawker and a number of their sister websites. There is news that they are selling off a couple of their websites. I think it is the AV Club and the Takeout to two buyers. And their, you know, portfolio of sites is a really key example of ones whose ad load has just increased to a point that has really, really detracted from the user experience.
The final question we wanted to tackle with things that publishers are struggling with right now is social media. And social media platforms have significantly impacted publishers, of course. One stat that highlights that is half of American adults get their news from social media. 53% of X or Twitter users get their news from there. 43% of Facebook and TikTok users get their news from those platforms, those apps, respectively. Jeremy, who's got the best what to do about social media strategy in terms of publishers?
So it is tricky. I think that, again, some of the ones that have the best, you know, what to do about social media strategy are the ones that are increasingly building around social media rather than relying on it, rather than counting on it. That's ultimately the best way to grow, you know, and there are some, you know, including The Times, but not exclusively, you know, there are a number that are really investing in email marketing, SMS marketing, everything that gets you around the gatekeeper. You know, essentially social media is a major gatekeeper at this point. The other one is search. You know, so if you're building a strategy that would be reliant on social media, I would just ask that publisher why, given the fact that the rules of engagement can just change on you immediately. And if I see somebody on stage saying like, oh, here's my great case study about how I work with social media, there's absolutely nothing that you can do as a publisher that will stop that you know, social media platform that you're reliant on from changing its model and its algorithm if it chooses to, you know? And so in that way, the best one is to not be reliant on it whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think a big part of the problem here is trust issues. People's distrust in news and information on social media was only slightly higher than its levels of distrust around information on TV and on news sites, according to the UN Educational, Scientific and Cultural Organization, UNESCO. But I think that this is a problem that could take a very, very long time to fix, because people are going to social media because a lot of the time it's easier to get there. That's where they're hanging out. It's when they're spending their time. But in terms of trust, it's kind of on a similar par with some of these more established media channels anyway. That's what we've got time for part one. Part two, we're talking all about what's next for publishers, but we move to the fourth quarter of today's episode. Today in other news, Be Real is facing a critical juncture, and X, formerly Twitter, pivots to CTV and video. Story one. Jeremy, in a recent briefing article, you write that spontaneous photo sharing app Be Real is facing a critical juncture as its financial prospects dim and user growth plateaus to 25 million daily active users. You point out that Be Real's journey from a pandemic era sensation to its current financial crossroads illustrates the ephemeral nature of social media success. But Jeremy, Be Real's next move will be blank, in your opinion.
Be Real's next move will be not covered by any mainstream publisher. You see how I brought it back to the first stump. I'm not trying to burn Be Real at all. And I think that it was a really interesting case study in, can you be a standalone minor social app these days? And the answer is no. It's really, you know, winner take all, you know, to some extent. And if you're not giving people a compelling reason to keep logging in, and if they're getting basically most of their entertainment and social interaction elsewhere, it's just that much harder to get people, convince people to open one more app during the course of the day. And Be Real hasn't given people enough of a compelling reason to do that.
Yeah. Social media relies on the network effect, and there's just not enough folks on it. Be Real in 2022 was, you know, gaining some popularity, but by mid-2023, just 15% of Gen Zers were using it, according to our July survey. Story two. Jeremy, in another piece titled X, formerly Twitter, pivots to CTV and video, you explain that Elon Musk is ambitiously expanding X with a connected TV app debuting on Amazon and Samsung devices in an attempt to emulate YouTube. You point out that the platform's existing user base and brand identity are rooted in short form, and so making a sudden pivot to video feels like a potentially jarring transition. Danny, how likely is this to succeed out of 10, and why?
I'd say maybe, I don't know, 5, but that kind of feels generous. I mean, that's still 5 out of 10. That's a failing grade, but, you know, maybe a little bit better than I first expected, because, you know, we wrote a story using our industry KPI data from Adelaide that showed that X had a pretty surprising attention value metric for ads. So basically, YouTube was the dominant platform for social attention for advertisements, but X was in second place. That's if you exclude podcasting. And it was still a distant second, but, you know, second nonetheless. And I think that shows that maybe it's something that shouldn't be written off by default by all advertisers, that there's a potential there to reach specific audiences with particular effectiveness. It might not be the right answer for everyone, but it might be the right answer for some. But at the same time, I think recent developments at X show that this change is just as subject to the whims of Elon Musk as any other, because a big anchor of their, you know, video business was this deal with Don Lemon. And then that was axed basically instantaneously after an interview that Musk wasn't too big of a fan of. So it's not the most reliable place to, you know, bank your advertising spending, even though you can reach some users pretty effectively there.
On the face of it, this does feel like a panic move, because the amount of money X or Twitter makes from advertising was more than cut in half last year. But we'll see. That's all we've got time for this episode. We'll see you tomorrow for part two of The Future of Publishers. Thank you so much to my guests. Thank you to Jeremy.
See you tomorrow.
Thank you to Danny.
Yeah, see you tomorrow. Hopefully we'll have some more positive things to say about the state of publishing.
We'll try. Thanks to Victoria, who edits the show, James, Stuart, and Sophie, the rest of the podcast crew, and thanks to everyone for listening in. We hope to see you tomorrow for part two of that very episode of the Behind the Numbers Daily, an e-marketer podcast made possible by Walmart Connect.